So today we're going to question everything. And I think you're going to enjoy this. So we're going to begin with the parable of Job, and then we're going to look at two questions, which I think are important questions you can ask all the time, anytime, and then living in the question. So question everything. I don't know about you, but when something really icky, sticky, yucky, stressful, confusing, whatever happens, don't you start questioning everything? Question all you know. You might even say, what did I do to deserve this? How am I going to get out of this? How long is it going to last? What do I need to do to feel better? Have you thought about questioning it, but with an open-ended question and allowing divine guidance to come in? And to know that that divine guidance is actually everywhere that you are all of the time, if you stop for long enough to be open to it. So I'd like to begin with the story of the parable of Job. He was a very holy, religious, and prosperous man. And I'll ask you, Randy, to do full screen for this next one, please. So it's interesting. I found this story really related to me in so many ways and so often in my life. And I'd like you to think about it as you hear this story.
There are three books in the Bible known as the wisdom literature: Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job. The first, Proverbs, shows us that God is wise and just, and God has ordered the world, and that it's fair. The righteous are rewarded, the wicked are punished, as in obey God, and you are blessed, disobey God, and you are cursed. In other words, you get what you deserve. And then we meet Ecclesiastes, who observes people don't always get what they seemingly deserve. He says the world isn't always fair. These are the words of the quester: smoke, nothing but smoke. There's nothing to anything. It's all smoke. And this can make you question, is God wise, fair, and just? It's that question that is being explored in the book of Job. It begins with the strange story that takes place up in the heavens, which are described something like a heavenly command center. God is there with these angelic creatures called the sons of God. And they're all there, reporting for duty. God points out Job, his servant, showing how righteous and good he is. Then one of these angelic creatures approaches. He's referred to in Hebrew as the Satan. The word literally means the one who is opposed. So out of all the angelic entities, he is the one questioning how God is running the world. And he proposes that Job might not actually love God, that he's only a good person because God rewards him. If God were to take away all the good things he gave to Job, then we would see his true colors. Satan thinks Job is just obeying to get what he wants. So God agrees to this experiment and allows Satan to inflict suffering on Job. And Job loses everyone and everything that he cares about. It's devastating. And remember, he deserves none of this. God himself said so. The remarkable thing is that in the midst of all this suffering, Job still praises God, at least in chapters 1 and 2. But then Satan goes to God and says, you know, those were all things, but what about if we were to inflict on he himself? And God thinks about it and says, okay, go for it. And so Job ends up having all kinds of physical problems, blisters, boils, and extreme physical illness. And then in chapter 3, we find out how he's really feeling inside. He unleashes this poem that reveals this devastation. It's a long, elaborate curse on the day that he was born. After this, some of Job's friends come to visit him to offer their help. They think Job must have done something terribly wrong to deserve this. After all, knowing God is just, and knowing the world is ordered by God's justice and fairness, Job must be getting what he deserves. And so for the next 34 chapters, the friends and Job go back and forth in very intense, heavy Hebrew poetry. The friends keep speculating about how God might have sent such suffering, and even start making up lists of hypothetical sins that Job must have committed. But after each accusation, Job defends his innocence. And Job is innocent. He is. He's also on an emotional roller coaster. At some moments, he's very confident that God is still wise and just. Yet, in other moments, he's doubting God's goodness. He even begins to accuse God of being reckless, unfair, and corrupt. So by the end, Job demands that God come and explain himself in person, and God does. He comes in the form of a great storm cloud. And God doesn't give Job a direct answer. He doesn't tell Job about the conversation with Satan. He takes Job on a virtual tour of the universe. He shows Job how grand the world is and asks him if he's even capable of running it or understanding it just for a day. He shows how much detail there is in the world. Things that we might not see every day, but really don't understand it at all. Only God does. And he knows it all intimately. He shows Job how he pays attention to the beauty and the operations of the universe in ways that we haven't even imagined, and in places that we will never see. Then to conclude, God shows Job two wondrous beasts and brags about how great they are, even if they are dangerous. God says they're not evil. They're actually a part of his good world. And then that's it. That's God's whole defense. It's kind of weird. I mean, what was this all about? From Job's point of view, it looks like God is not just. But God's perspective is infinitely bigger. He is dynamically interacting with a whole universe of complexity when he makes decisions. It shows that Job asking God to defend himself is actually kind of absurd. He couldn't comprehend this kind of complexity even if he wanted to. So where does that leave him and us? Well, it leaves Job in a place of humility, and he never learned why he suffered. And he's able to love the Lord and live in peace. But that's not where the book ends, because after this, God restores to Job double everything he had lost. And this again is surprising. I mean, is this a reward? Is God saying, "Congratulations, Job, you passed this elaborate test"? No. The whole book makes the point that Job losing everything was not a punishment, and so now getting it back isn't a reward. So why does he get it back? Apparently, God decided to give Job a gift. We don't know why, but what we do know is that Job is now the kind of person who, no matter what comes, good or bad, he can trust God's wisdom. And that's the book of Job.
I don't know if you have read much of the Bible, but it really is interesting how it's intended, this particular story is intended to bring some sort of comfort, some sort of hope. And in Unity, we look at it through a metaphysical approach. And that is that that story basically is the story of each of us. And that and when you think about metaphysics, you think about any story contains just you. And every aspect of that story is you. And so how are you the story of Job? How have you lived the story of Job? So in the metaphysical viewpoint, looking within to your inner life using the parable of Job is where I went. And before I go further, as I thought about it for myself, the most current thing that came to mind was I'm on a healing journey at the moment. I have been eating whole foods and living more holistically than I ever have in my life, and I started end of September of this year. And the initial aim was to lose weight, which really is kind of a superficial reason. Because yesterday, as I was finishing my meditation, a little thought went floating by, like a flock of birds, sort of, or a cloud. And it basically said, do you really want to lose weight, or is it that you want to feel better? And my answer was, I want to feel better. I want to feel more vital and strong and able to do the things that I want to do. And so the question then became, well, then do you really need to lose weight for that? And I said, no, but it'd be nice. And then I started thinking about my own life and how I was like Job, that in my early years, I had everything. Anything I could ever want, I had. And all the health that I could want, all the youth that I could want, all of the jobs that I could want. Life was really, really great. And I kind of took it for granted. And as it started to decline, as I was taking it for granted, I started to suffer like he suffered. Now, maybe I didn't have boils, but I had pain and difficulty in moving around. And yet, through it all, I didn't lose my understanding of how life works. I didn't lose my understanding that my thoughts create my reality. But I also became aware that my thoughts create my reality. And so in this journey of feeling better, being healthier, and maybe ultimately losing some weight too, is a bit like Job being restored and having double what he had before. And I already feel that way. I mean, there are levels of health in my body that are occurring that I haven't experienced for 20 years as a consequence of this. And so how has your life presented like the life of Job? How has perhaps having everything and happily going along and things just kind of turn upside down and turn inside out, and yet here you find yourself able to start again with a choice, with a thought. So the metaphysical is that all these characters in Job, God, Satan, Job, each one of the friends, are all within you. We all contain God, the spirit within. We all contain Satan, the opposer. I'm sure you've heard that opposer in your mind. How many have? I mean, it's live and well. And it's the part of us that's yet unillumined. It's negative. It's violence prone. And we all have that. It depends on which one we feed, which one we choose to focus on. And Job is the part of us that has the ability to experience being mistreated, devastated, and afflicted, and able to come back and return to hope and purpose, and then be transformed. Job is everyone. He's you. And within you are all possibilities in consciousness. And your inner life reflects your outer life. So God is all-knowing. So God doesn't test us. So who is testing whom? We actually test ourselves. Because if you think of God as principle, as in it doesn't care what you choose to do with your free will, it goes, yes, do that. Just like when the opposer in the story of Job says, well, let's see, let's test his resilience, let's test his faith in God. And God basically in the book of Job says, just don't kill him, but you can go as far as you want to go in terms of the pain and the affliction. And we have that too in us, that testing our resolve. And maybe we don't do it intentionally. I certainly didn't do it intentionally, did you? But it's part of who we are. It's part of how we learn to dance with the spirit within and to allow it to be the loudest voice. You have the freedom of choice in all aspects of your life. I mean, stuff happens in life. Things come and go, and like the idea of the two beasts. I mean, there are so many awful things in the world, but they're all part of God's creation, part of the universe's beingness. And it's not that they're bad or good. They just are. And you choose to paint it with the bad brush or the good brush, the red pill or the blue pill. You can be negative, or you can move forward decisively. Now, I know there are times where I have wailed and gnashed my teeth, if you remember that phrase from the Bible. And then I remember, okay, make it good. Wail and gnash until I've got it out of my system, until I'm open and ready to receive that quieter, happier, more joyful voice. Have you done that? I mean, it's a good thing I still have my teeth for all the gnashing I did. So I have two questions that I'd like you to think about that I think are the most wonderful guiding questions, especially when you're in a state of confusion, conflict, negativity. Are my thoughts useful? And how do they behave? Are my thoughts useful? And how do they behave? Our thinking actually gets in the way of our accomplishing our goals. Because, I don't know, it's that Satan in us, that opposer, that negative nanny that's in our head that goes, no, you're not good enough, or no, you don't have enough time, or you're too old, or so-and-so said you could never accomplish that. Thoughts are things, powerful things, when mixed with definitiveness of purpose, persistence, and a burning desire for their translation into riches and other material objects. That's Napoleon Hill. And Charles Fillmore said, thoughts are things, words have wings. The thing is that they flap within us first and wreak havoc or blessings there, and then they flap outside of us and wreak havoc or blessings outside of us. So how's your life right now? Mine's pretty good, especially with that awareness I had yesterday that I just want to feel good rather than I need to accomplish some set weight goal for me. So what about you? You may have a goal or something you're really bugged about that you haven't been able to accomplish, but you really would like to. What's underneath that? What do you really want? What's that burning, yearning desire that's within you? The difference is knowing what you want. And it starts with knowing what you don't want. And that's unfortunately how I've learned. I needed to be knocked over, knocked down, dragged through the mud, wailed and gnashed to kind of get really clear on what it is that I want. Have you? Because if you haven't, I'd like to really chat with you. You must be really special. And I know you are special. I'm just teasing. Because there are people who naturally walk through life with a positive outlook and just seem to let things roll off of them. And I envy that, and I choose to emulate that. Because I know that what I focus on grows, what you focus on grows. So think about your big dreams, no matter what age you're at. They may be only one or there may be only one or two of them that really matter to you. For me, it's the feeling better. I mean, I'm coming up to being 65, and I have a dear friend who is 94. And I'd like to be 94 and feeling good. How about you? What's your big dream? It's not about skill or talent. Maybe you simply lacked the thinking or motivation and desire for the dream. You have to really want it. I mean, really want it, if you ever want a chance of reaching it. I mean, just kind of saying, oh, well, it would be kind of nice if. But when you say it would be kind of nice if, do you hear that opposer underneath that says, yeah, right, you really don't mean that? Until you do. So what do you wish you had right now? And then ask yourself as the answer comes up, are my thoughts useful around that which I wish? And how do they behave? Just know what it is that you really want and align your thinking and actions to achieve that. And if you don't know how to align with what you want, close your eyes just for a moment and think of that thing that you want. How would it feel if you had it? Because that's how you align your thinking and then your actions to achieve it. Like when I think about myself and feeling better, I see myself running down the beach, crawling around on my hands and knees with my brand new grandbaby. I see myself riding my bicycle. What do you see? And you know, in that, I feel the wind on my face, the joy in my heart. What do you feel? You have to be determined. It's not just an, oh, well, maybe, gosh, golly, maybe. Are you determined? Are you ready to make up your mind to think and do whatever is necessary until you succeed? Do I see anybody nodding? Are you nodding? Most people give up way too soon. Are you one of them? I know there's a lot of people that say, oh, I'm so jealous that you do this or you do that. Are you willing to do that, to be that? Whatever it is that you're looking at someone else doing, having, being? Why not start your day with a prayer? Just 5 minutes to align yourself with what it is that you hope to see in that day. See it in your mind. Feel it in your body. Because that will guide you. You have to decide to just keep going. Just decide and keep going. Job did that. He just kept going. So just asking why doesn't work in many cases. Because what is why? Why underneath it has all of the pain, all of the negative, all of the, I don't deserve this. Why is this happening to me? I need to know the answer to that. Why is actually irrelevant? Something very different is needed in your thinking. So living in the question, aka being open to divine guidance, is the way to do it. So what is divine guidance and how does it communicate? Good question, isn't it? Sometimes for me it's the cosmic 2x4. A door slams shut, maybe not literally, and I can't go in that direction. That to me is divine guidance, no matter how much I push to go in a certain way or to do something and it's just not happening. That's divine guidance. Or doors fly open in directions that, and again, not literally, in directions I never thought I would go. And And it's good, and it feels good, and it's kind of challenging and exhilarating and maybe even a little nerve-wracking. But I feel alive and vital. That's how divine guidance connects with me. I'm usually pretty stubborn, so it has to be pretty loud or pretty definitive for me. I call it my cosmic 2x4, lovingly. And I'm learning to not have it be quite so harsh at times. Usually divine guidance is actually not direct. It's not a direct explanation or point-blank answers or head-on help which solves the problem. Just like with Job, God didn't give him point-blank answers. He just showed him the marvel of the world. And isn't that what we do when we go into prayerful meditation? Is to open up to the beauty of what spirit is. And as soon as we do, it's like everything else that might have been a concern can and does fall away if you let it. Divine guidance leads you to the possibilities of the right answer or help. It leads you. It doesn't necessarily come up right in front of you and go, here it is. Here's the answer. But sometimes it does. Because it opens you up to the right answer. If you're open to receive the right answer, the work's done. So are you open? Are you? Are you open? I'm not convinced, Amelia. That was a maybe. So from Job 32:8, there is a spirit in man, and the breath of the Almighty giveth them understanding. And basically that says that spirit is within, and it fills us like our breath does, with the understanding that we need at any given time. So the lesson, no amount of justifying or explaining gives you any real satisfaction where suffering is concerned. At least I agree with that. The only satisfaction you can ever have is in overcoming it. So if you keep saying why, you don't ever really get to the satisfaction of having overcome it. The why kind of keeps you there. So you have to change your thinking. So what do you wish right now? Because there are two questions. Are your thoughts around it useful? And how do they behave? Are they empowering you, lifting you, encouraging you, inspiring you? Or are they stopping you in your tracks? Because you get to choose. So can I have full screen, Randy? Let's say these next few affirmations together, if that's comfortable. I choose my own path. I stay true to myself and my own values. I experiment with choices. I like that, the idea of experimenting. Because you know what? You can choose something, doesn't work or feel good, choose something else. I might be afraid, but I don't let fear stop me from trying new things. I like that too. I can only live a meaningful life if I keep making choices and moving forward, pushing past my fears and testing my limits. Yes. And a meaningful life, I believe, means that I feel empowered, I feel good, I feel positive, I feel hopeful, I feel inspired. So we looked at the parable of Job. Now you can tell all your friends, you know it from the beginning to the end. And the two questions, are my thoughts useful and how do they behave? And then living, being open to the question. And open to the answer. So let's anchor this with work wonders from within.
Zenobi Baker, please join me in singing. Work wonders from within, that's where to look within. There's no use looking somewhere else for power that you need to win. Work wonders from within. Be sure you look. look within. Just take your mind from outer fears. Don't think it's too late. Begin. In you, in me, there's power to be. In you, in me, there's power that will set us free. My course is up to me. Of course it's up to me. So I'll set my mind to use my power of wonders I want to see. Work wonders from within. That's where to look within. There's no use looking somewhere else for power that you need to win. Work wonders from within. Be sure to look within. Just take your mind from outer fears. Don't think it's too late. Begin. In you and me, there's power to be. In you and me, there's power that will set us free. My course is up to me. Of course it's up to me. So I'll set my mind to use my power of wonders I want to see.